From Las Vegas, Nevada, close to the Kingdom of Nye. Good morning, good evening, wherever you may be. I'm George Norrie, and this is Coast to Coast AM, and we are here at the UFO Crash Retrieval Conference and broadcasting from the studios of KXNT, our monster affiliate here in Las Vegas. While the nation's jobless ranks zoomed past 10 million last month, the most in a quarter century, and the unemployment rate soared to a 14-year high of 6.5%. This is not good. And the American auto industry is running on fumes. General Motors, the nation's largest automaker, will run out of cash at the end of the year after piling up billions in third quarter losses and burning through cash at an alarming rate. Ford Motor Company is in the same situation. General Motors has suspended talks to acquire Chrysler. Things are so severe. And GM and Ford, they're asking Congress for $50 billion in some form of bailout or loan. Inheriting an economy in peril, President-elect Obama has warned that the nation faces the challenge urgently to help Americans devastated by lost jobs, disappearing savings, and homes seized in foreclosure. He says it's not going to be easy for us to dig ourselves out of the hole we are in. He is so correct. The number one priority, he says, is to get Congress to approve another economic stimulus plan, but we've got to do much more than that. President-elect Obama called Nancy Reagan to apologize for joking that she had held seances at the White House. At a news conference in Chicago, Obama said that he had spoken with all the living presidents as he prepares to take office and didn't want to get into a Nancy Reagan thing about doing seances. The 87-year-old former First Lady had consulted with astrologers during her husband's presidency, but Barack Obama called her and apologized. Late-season Hurricane Paloma strengthened to a Category 3. The storm was expected to lose some strength overnight before punching Cuba's midsection on Saturday. Not surprisingly, the eBay final bid to snatch that Bigfoot hoax costume, remember that? That was in an ice freezer, has now been declared a hoax. As you remember, the winning bid on eBay was over $250,000. Lauren Coleman of CryptoMundo, our cryptozoologist, contacted me today and told me about this story. Joshua Warren, our very special guest, ghost hunter, he was the one who was trying to resolve the conflict between the Indiana owner of the fake who was tricked out of his $50,000 and two Georgia gentlemen. Well, Joshua Warren on the line with us now. Josh, I told you it could be a hoax.
Oh, well, you know, that's true. And, of course, I always expected that that could indeed be the case. I was surprised that the thing even really got any bidding started. And so I was always suspicious when it got up to over $250,000. But it appears that the winning bidder was using some sort of an eBay sniping program that would automatically outbid any legitimate bid that was placed. And so indeed, it turns out that the final bid was fraudulent. And right now, of course, they're paying the consequences with eBay. But we went back and contacted all of the legitimate bidders because there were over 100 bids placed on this thing. And, you know, this auction coincided perfectly with the initial collapse of the economy. And so now all of the legitimate bidders are sort of reticent. So basically, you know, I was hoping that this could create a positive situation. Any profit would go to research and charities. But if I don't hear something over the next few days from a legitimate bidder who wants to commit, or for that matter, anybody else, you know, who may be listening to the show, who can contact me through joshuapwarren.com, then I don't think there's much hope, and we're going to have to watch this ridiculous saga sort of play out in the courts.
And you're going to wash your hands on the eBay situation then? You won't put it back up?
No. No, this was one shot to see if indeed there was a way to, as you said, resolve this issue. But if this does not work out, then I'm going to once again step aside. As you know, I was never involved in the original hoax.
No, not at all. Nor would you ever be, Joshua.
Absolutely not. That would ruin everything. I've worked so hard to achieve in terms of research over the years.
All right, Josh, keep in touch with us. And, well, you know, I don't want to say I told you so, but that's what happened. Hey, we're at the 6th International UFO Crash Retrieval Conference at the Tuscany Suites Hotel in Las Vegas, Nevada. And I had my speech and little meet and greet earlier tonight. Wonderful opportunity to meet a lot of you, and thanks for the feedback and the questions. We just had a wonderful time. And in a moment, Linda Moulton Howe sits in with me as we do this incredible show with a number of guests throughout the evening. So I'll be back with Linda in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Linda Moulton Howe is an Emmy Award-winning television producer, investigative reporter, and author who goes directly to the men and women at the forefront of science and environmental challenges. She's a key speaker here at the UFO Crash Retrieval Conference and is co-anchoring tonight's Coast to Coast show with me here in Las Vegas. Hey, Linda, how are you?
It is so good to see your eyes again, and you're wearing this great chocolate striped shirt for Coast listeners. You look great. And it's fun to be back because I think this is one of the most important conferences that's held every year.
You know, when I had an opportunity to speak to so many people who are at the conference tonight, you could tell how darn serious they are about this subject of UFOs and crash retrievals. And it's really, to me, someone who has devoted his life to investigating these stories, you too, Linda, it's really sobering to see people out there that care so much about this subject.
And you know why? It's because Ryan and I and everybody else, we know that we literally have a government that has been lying for at least 60 years.
Throughout this evening, we're going to bring you a number of guests who will be talking about this disclosure attempt and also what else has been going on in this field of ufology. Linda, you handled also just in a very professional manner and in-depth manner the Stephenville, Texas UFO case of about a year ago, so much so that you became one of our half hours that will appear on the Sci-Fi show the week of November 16th.
And isn't this something that, George, it's going to air, as I understand it, November 19th,
your
basically.
Segment, yeah.
Yeah, in across the country. And we've got 11 p.m. Eastern and Pacific and midnight in the mountain, and I think 11 p.m. in California. And the thing about it is, here we are. We're talking in November of 2008. This is going to air in just a week or so. And yet we did this show about events that it started on New Year's Day 2008 in Stephenville, and to have them erupt again in the fall of 2008, yeah. And in some ways, as bizarre as January was, the descriptions this round, which went on for almost an entire week, I was getting calls literally every night from people in Stephenville or Granbury or that area, and they're saying, Linda, they're standing out in their yard. Linda, I'm watching. And I would get these descriptions. And I think the most incredible is the son of the Channel 7 owner of the TV station uh-huh. there. And he said, we're watching jets. They're flashing and they're moving. And there's this big white light. And below the white light, there's a red light. And the jets are going right now as I'm talking to you. And Linda, the flashing lights, they've disappeared. Where did they go? Well, does this mean some standard operation procedure, the jets which shut off all of their flashing lights as they approached some kind of an unknown? Or does it mean that something else happened in the sky? And I have been talking with several people in Texas. I'm talking with Angela Joyner. We're trying to find out what exactly did happen between the jets and all these lights.
Angela was a reporter who got knocked off the newspaper because she wanted to continue investigating this, and they said no.
That's exactly right. She's trying to find out more. We're also going through and trying to get more radar, and we're doing a lot of stuff right now, but the descriptions of the eyewitnesses, there was a woman working in one of the FEMA emergency offices, and I talked to her, and she said, we got a call from, it was one of her relatives, and they said, you got to get in the car and just start driving for Stephenville. This was just a week and a half ago. And she said she and her daughter are in the car. And all of a sudden, here is this huge white, bright light. And she's trying to drive and look, and her daughter is saying, "Mom, Mom, there's three orange lights." And these three orange lights would come on exactly, this happened so many times, the craft was going zigzagging every time these three orange lights would come on. The three orange lights would go off, and then the craft would be going absolutely straight. Then they'd see the orange lights, and it would do this zigzag. And the woman with a FEMA background and context talking to me, she said, "Linda, is there anything that humans have that can go from a straight, slow pace to zigzagging and then slow pace and zigzagging and does it with orange lights?" And my answer is, I don't know, but if there is anybody listening in our military or intelligence who wants to get in touch with me and give me any information off the record or on the record, I would love to hear from people who have been seeing the phenomenon, not only in Texas. I've been getting this from all over the country. And get in touch with me at earthfiles@earthfiles.com. And this is so important because we're here in Las Vegas because Ryan Wood and others know that we are sitting on the tip of an iceberg in which a government felt compelled to lie. A policy of denial in the interest of national security is the stated reason about not just 2008, but going back, all these people in this country who have experienced what all these people are experiencing in Texas, and the government says, you haven't seen anything, it doesn't exist, and all of a sudden we're in a nation where ridicule and sarcasm can suppress facts and truth. And that's why I do what I do. I completely disagree with such a policy of denial. And here we've got people all over who are reporting amazing encounters with lights right now.
Were you always interested in this field because you have a heavy news background, a heavy investigative news background? You know, you've been an investigator for television stations around the country.
Yeah, long time.
But at what point did this interest and this fascination with the unusual, the strangeness, as you call it, the high strangeness, when did that happen?
It was walking through that Alice in Wonderland mirror in September of 79, trying to get to the bottom of why were all those animals dying first in the state of Colorado, which is where I was director of special projects at the CBS station. And I really honestly, George, thought that I was in some kind of a Dugway proving ground story, that there was some contamination in the environment and the government was going around odd that they would leave animals dead to be found with these excisions. But right at the very beginning, I thought, I'm in a Dugway proving ground story, and I'm going to get to the bottom of this. Why is the government doing this? And it was the sheriffs. It was the deputies. It was the ranchers. All those first interviews, not with a camera, me going out just trying to find who can I talk with, right? And sitting in floors and offices and barns with people and having the sheriffs and the deputies say, "Linda, we're not dealing with predator. We're not dealing with disease. We're not dealing with satanic cult." Those are deflection. That's to keep the media off our backs. We're dealing with creatures not from this planet. And when I would say, "Can you please tell me this on the record?"
Yeah. Let me turn my camera on.
Yeah, they would look to the ground. And this is before Cruz. See, this is when I really was getting what law enforcement really, really thought. Yeah. And that's why I dedicated eventually my book, An Alien Harvest, to law enforcement. Because it was those people all the way back into the 50s, really, when you trace back the American story on mutilations, it goes way back before the horse in Southern Colorado. Law enforcement knew that the only way that you could have a 2,000-pound bull on its back with its legs in the air, with an ear missing, eye, tongue, jaw, genitals, and rectum cord out, not have a single, no struggle line, no tracks even of the animal coming up to where it is found on its back. This is a real case. On its back, legs up in the air, all these excisions, no blood, everything is dry.
No footprints around.
Nothing. And the sheriff said, something up there, meaning
whatever
pointing to the sky, put this animal down here in this condition.
You remember Close Encounters of the Third Kind when they were in northern Africa and you had all these tribes people there and they were chanting that five-tone thing.
That's right.
You know, na, 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 na.
That's right.
Na, and they all pointed to the sky.
That's right.
That
it is, yeah, because law enforcement knew. There's only one way. When you would find a mutilated, this happened also, a mutilated calf. This was up in the Northwest. It's up on a high ridge. It was high elevation, complete snow. And here is an animal freshly mutilated lying on top of the snow. And there's not a track. There's not a trickle of blood. And the sheriff said, whatever we're dealing with, it is picking these animals up out of pastures and it is somehow delivering them to the spot where they are found. Well, when you're exposed to that, and I come from a hard science environment background. That's been my beat from the time I was at Stanford doing work at the Stanford Linear Accelerator in the medical center. That was my whole life. I'm in the same vein. What's happening to these animals? Let's collect tissue. Let's collect soil. Let's collect plants. And as I started doing the forensics, the anomalies kept piling up. And eventually I got to work with Dr. John Altshuler, hematologist and pathologist. And I'll never forget going over to his lab on the first series of tissues and fluids that I had gotten from some mutilations and had gone into the field, collected it in formalin, had FedExed to him. And he said, I want you to see something. He said, when I first had this tissue prepared, he said, I knew that I should be seeing something here if the hemoglobin is cooked, which is what he had established. Something hot enough to cook the hemoglobin. And he said, I went to a friend of mine who's a gynecologist and uses lasers in surgery all the time. And I said, would you please give me a series of your slides before and after surgery?
Right.
And he said, I want you to look. He had a stereoscopic photo, light microscope. And we're looking on the left eye into the gynecology and we're looking in the right eye into tissue that I had sent to him. It was very clear the carbon residue looks like little tiny grains of pepper when you look at it magnified in the laser surgery.
It's like looking at a diamond with carbon deposits, right?
We're carbon-based life form.
Yeah.
If you take humans, animals, or anything and expose it to heat, you get that black look. The mutilated animal, absolutely zero. All of the tissue that I sent him, there was no carbon residue.
Clean cuts, everything.
And he said, I'm very puzzled because we've got the hard evidence of cooked hemoglobin, but we have no evidence of a carbon residue if the instrument is a laser. These are the hard facts that I was confronting right from the beginning of my investigations that were saying to me, law enforcement's telling me it's creatures from outer space. But how do we prove this? Well, here we sit, eye to eye, having shared on the air all of these incredible firsthand testimonies for a long time by people in military and intelligence who have said to me, both off and on the record, we're dealing with extraterrestrial biological entities or time travelers or other dimensionals. An extraterrestrial today in 2008, I think, among most of my colleagues, has now expanded to include everything that is not a biological life form with a double DNA on this planet now. It's everything else.
This conference is so important because I think some top government officials, and Ryan Wood can answer this when he comes in and joins us soon, I think they're at this conference. I think
probably
they're taking notes. I think they're monitoring things that people like you and so many of the other presenters are. You know, I think they follow Dr. Roger Lear around whenever he does an alien implant extract. I do.
Well, I'll tell you, one of the things that I would like to talk with Ryan about is what does he think the chances are that with the president-elect Obama being a new administration, with John Podesta coming in from the sci-fi background on Kexburg, May we know some facts.
We'll be back in a moment with Ryan Wood, ufologist and UFO investigator, who's putting on this 2008 UFO Crash Retrieval Conference. I'm George Norrie, live in the studios of KXNT in Las Vegas. Tough assignment for me, but Ian Punnett's going to hold up the fort on Saturday night. Ian, you wouldn't believe it. Linda Moulton Howe dancing to that song in the studio.
I think I know better than that.
How you doing?
I am.
Yeah,
hi, Linda. How are you
doing? Hi, Ian.
Thank God we have witnesses here.
Well, how much fun are you having in Vegas, huh?
It's a lot of work. And you know what happens here? Stays here.
Well, here, let me just tell you real quickly then, so I won't keep you from it, but coming up this weekend, three things, because I'm doing Saturday and Sunday. So there's a new book out exploring new mysteries of the Titanic. You wouldn't think that there would be anything left to talk about, but there
are. I love those stories.
I know, I do too, and there's some real interesting ones coming up in the first hour on Saturday night. And then later on, John Michael Greer, whom we all know for being sort of like the world's authority on druidism and fairies and elves, but he has this amazing book. He's a great writer, and he's written his forecast for what he thinks society might become after we run out of oil.
And it
is a well-researched, it's not just some kind of, you know, dream sequence. It's a really well-articulated argument of what might happen to both the United States and then in particular communities and what we've expected from our institutions. And then on Sunday night, I can only tell you that, you know, Tracy Twyman, she puts a lot of research into what she does, and there's a new book out about an ultra-secret CIA mind control sex slave operation. And
I'm sure you'll get to the bottom of this.
It sounds crazy till you read it, and it's like why you can't be, and that all these people cannot be hallucinating. But we'll get to that, and that'll be coming up this weekend. It's about as much fun as any of us could have. Not being in Las Vegas like you and Linda.
Catch you later, Ian. Thanks for everything you do, my friend. And we'll be back in a moment with Ryan Wood and Linda Moulton Howe on Coast to Coast AM. Ryan Wood is a ufologist who holds a Bachelor of Science degree in mathematics and computer science, currently managing the content of MajesticDocuments.com. Ryan has completed a documentary titled The Secret and has published two books and a CD-ROM dealing with the Majestic documents and their authenticity. A UFO investigator with MUFON, Ryan has chosen to specialize in the strategic problems of ufology, such as unquestionable proof and improve media acceptance of that proof.
And you know, George and Ryan, I just, for both of you, to the Coast audience, I think that I want to say, as somebody who has been doing Coast for a long time, that www.majesticdocuments.com is absolutely one of the most important websites that there is, and that everybody listening who really would like to be exposed to what may be under the surface of our government's policy of denial, allegedly in the interest of national security, should go to MajesticDocuments.com and try, literally, to go through. How many documents are there now, Ryan?
Well, there's probably 500 pages of documents. Some top secret, some are confidential, some are just related to the topic. But I can guarantee you, you can spend several hours and not get through it all just reading the documents that are interesting and what you say are the level below. Some are compelling and stunning in that they're talk about extraterrestrials and the crash retrieval analysis done after Roswell, such as the White Hot memo and others. But then there's other sort of secondary memos that are supportive. They're bureaucratic.
And they give a context.
Yeah, they give a context, and they become very powerful because you see for the first time this huge mosaic of evidence, and you realize, well, why would somebody do all this if it wasn't real? And
your dad has that document, that is actual carbon document that we refer to as the Byrne memo, that goes back, we think, to around 61 to 63 at the time when Kennedy was coming into office and was in office. And that I've gone into that in Earth Files and Coast to Coast in the past, but it is an example of the kind of document. This is not a Xerox.
No, no. This is an original onion skin document with magenta ink typed on it that you can do mass spectroscopy and liquid chromatography on. You can look at the watermarks and compare them with other government watermarks. You can look at the typefaces. You can do the classic FBI forensic work on the document, let alone the content and what it says about it.
And we know it goes back to the early 60s. We know it says that it's from MJ1, who was identified as director of the Central Intelligence Agency. Right. We know that it is supposed to be directed to MJ2 through MJ7. And the bottom line, as your dad has articulated, that it not only is going into changes that the director of the CIA wants to make about how essentially to handle UFO matters in relationship to the executive branch, with some very, very serious implications that may have set up what led, perhaps, to Kennedy's assassination. But there is a paragraph in there that basically your dad interprets that there can be executive orders classified, that a president could issue an order that it is classified and no one will know, not Congress, not the American public, and certainly not the media. And that goes right to the heart of my own research the last 5 years with Andrew Kistner in New Mexico, who had all those leaks from White Sands and from the Naval Research Lab about Truman putting together a classified executive order that set in motion the policy of denial in the interest of national security that no one was to know except MJ-12 and those with the classified need to know.
Right.
Sitting here today, we have just gone into a whole new administration, which in its own way might be slightly revolutionary for the United States in terms of change.
It's been a long time.
It's been a very long time up to this point. Do you think, sitting here tonight, that there's any chance with John Podesta having knowledge about Kexburg and working with sci-fi and now being part of this new administration?
Former Clinton aide.
That we might get some more truth?
Well, I'm hopeful that we will get more truth. The question is, when will they? It's a very complicated problem, and it's got multiple layers of secrecy and issues. And until they fix the sort of primary things that they've been hired, in essence, by the American people to solve, the economy, et cetera, they're not going to get to it. I suspect that they're going to get to it maybe if they execute on the important stuff that fixes things, they'll get to it in a year or two.
Or more, right.
Yeah, maybe the second term or something. Yeah. But that's the...
Well, they got to fix the economy if there's going to be a second term.
That's absolutely right.
What would motivate, what would be the leverage point after 60 years of solid lies, allegedly patriotic lies, but lies nevertheless?
Yeah.
They know, we know, that we are dealing with something that is put in their own category as non-human. They call them non-human entities, NHEs, or extraterrestrial biological entities, EBEs, but there are all these acronyms. This is our own government in documents that have been leaked or people who have seen them.
There's got to be a real motivation for the government to do this. And the only motivation that I can see that's clear is we want the energy technology. I mean, that may be the most dangerous thing for them to tackle or deal with. You know, we all know that flying saucers don't use conventional stuff.
Yeah, they're not burning coal.
Right. Or gasoline.
or Jet A or something.
They probably drink it. They live with it.
So that's the key challenge is to how do you let that anti-gravity out, at the same time control it and not allow... Osama bin Laden to show up on Venice Beach with a tactical nuke or something.
And who's going to make money off of it?
Well, that's the other thing. And this is something that you experienced with researching the bismuth magnesium piece. That is, here's an alleged piece of a crash saucer, and it's very novel and unique. And all the physicists and metallurgists say that, yeah, this is weird. I can't make this. I can patent it, but I can't manufacture it. I don't know what it's good for.
That's right.
And so I can't make money off of it. And it's, in essence, a glorified paperweight on the table awaiting breakthroughs in our science and understanding as to how to leverage and capture that value and economic value. And that's the same problem that's faced with the power plant. As we, it levitates, but how do you make more of them? Or how do you understand the nature of what's going on? And so that's the area where I would think that might be a driving motivation for them to consider it. But there may be something far more safe that's been going on in the past, things like alleged claims of reverse engineering associated with the fiber optics or night vision goggles, or there may be other simple things that are obvious to extract and feed into the economy that aren't so
dramatic
and unknown response. That's the critical thing, is you don't understand how society will react. If you were to tell them there's ETs here, most people would say, okay, fine. If you say, what's the proof? Well, Roswell was real. Okay.
And animal mutilations are linked, and then it becomes very dangerous.
And then they begin to panic too, Linda.
Well, I'm
hoping. You tell them that they're mutilating animals, all of a sudden a human goes, oh my God, why?
But if you can say it's because they have a survival problem that is linked to the survival of our planet, then most humans, I think, can extend out, oh, well, we kill them every day, but we need some kind of a trade agreement here then, because the ranchers need to be in on the deal, not left out in the dark.
I agree, but what if we as humans are being abducted and mutilated the same way because they need us? Then you have panic.
We don't have any hard evidence of human mutilations. I would say after 28 years, humans are treated highly differently than
humans. But don't we
have
people disappearing, just merely disappearing?
Yeah.
But I don't think you come at this problem from that standpoint of those ifs. I think that it is more, we're not alone in this universe. There are other things that have been coming and going and interacting with this planet far longer than a century. That goes back to Sumeria and before. And it's time that whatever we are in relationship to it, that we can stand and face it, that it becomes, you're not our keepers, you're not our gods, you're another life form, and let's get this back on a more even keel so we know where we stand if there's conflict or what's going on out there. And one of the things I'm curious, Ryan, you started the conference with the idea of like a 10-year plan of 10-year conference.
Well, this is number six.
This is
right?
number six, yeah.
And how close do you think you are in your 10-year plan to the government living up to its unstated side of the bargain and coming clean, and we all being able to come to the 10th conference with, and we're not alone in the universe, this is who they are, and this is why they're here.
Maybe they can join us at that conference, well, whoever
that would be fantastic.
They may be.
That's right. Well, my opinion is that we're going to have to drag the evidence out of the system, kicking and screaming all the way, and that by witness, I think there's a lot of evidence inside the National Archives. You know, the bad guys don't know where it is because we have football fields worth of documents. And I don't know where it is, but I've got strategies to figure out where it is and techniques. And the first person to the cache of thousands of pages of documents that are right out of the National Archives, because the National Archivist, the head archivist has said, if it says magic on it, top secret magic, and doesn't say Air Force or DOD or anything else, I'll declassify it right on the spot. If it says Interplanetary Phenomenon Unit, I'll declassify it, provided it's not somebody else's equity, so to speak. If he has no rules associated with these code words and no guidelines, and so he treats it like, if it doesn't say anything about technology in it, just talks about extraterrestrials, the things like that, he'll declassify it. And so I'm confident that you could get a powerful cluster of documents out of the archives, if you could find them. I know they're in there because they're sort of spread to the wind.
And they're in Suitland underground, that's inaccessible to all of us.
Well, I think that they're also in College Park, Maryland, but in some of the vaults there, the classified vaults.
But do you know of any precedent where there has been a classified executive order by a president of the United States that then is rescinded and made public? AEC, anything?
No, I'm
nothing
not aware of
nothing sealed, anything like that.
There's been stuff that's been declassified,
after 50 years,
or something that's not relevant to technology or secrets at the time or personnel. They declassify top secret stuff all the time. But as far as an executive order signed by the president,
that's right.
No. I mean, I think even the acknowledgement of a classified executive order is still off the table. Nobody has officially acknowledged that such a law and such an order could exist.
Except the leakers have.
Except the leakers, right.
They definitely have. And just thinking that we are 2012, this kind of strange next marker in the timeline that everybody is kind of nervous about, like they were with Y2K. What do you think, is there any mechanism that anybody in Congress could do as a leverage point to go after an executive order if they had enough evidence that one existed from 1947 signed by Harry S. Truman? Could a 2008 going forward Congress demand to have that out in their hands and then declare it open? Is there any mechanism for doing
that? Well, the only thing that I can think of that, short of an intricate behind-the-scenes secrecy, talking to more secrecy thing, is to just have Congress declare that all secrecy oaths associated with extraterrestrials are null and void. And that you are free to talk about anything to anybody for any reason, and we prefer that you write your congressman a detailed 10-page memo about your personal involvement.
It's going to take a congressional hero, though, Ryan, to do that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because like you said, with the economy, the Iraq war and everything, they will put the UFO situation on the back burner.
Oh, yeah.
Only because they will think that the public will think that their priorities are all screwed up.
Absolutely correct, George.
So it's deep six for another 100 years.
You know, this economy, I've been told by a number of experts, could take years to get us back to where we were. So that's a problem that is obviously going to be on Obama's list, number one issue in the campaign. Ironically, Iraq, which was the top issue 4 years ago, was way down on the bottom this year. But if you threw in, as we've talked to Stephen Bassett about, this very important subject of disclosure, if you tried to get Congress today to push for that and put some efforts into it, legitimate efforts, with everything that's going on in this planet, they'd laugh at us. And what we're going to need, Ryan and Linda, is someone to leak something that is so intense that they can't deny it.
Or that the non-human phenomenon acts finally in some huge public global way that is indisputable to all nations.
And not a false flag, not some psychic who thinks they're coming down on a certain day. It's got to be something dramatic, almost like Independence Day, the movie, but in a safer way.
Right.
Now, what do you think in four more years we might be talking about at this conference?
Well, I think we have many more UFO crash retrieval events to discuss. I mean, there's 74 in my book, Magic Eyes Only, and MAJIC, and there's another 25 on my desk. And if I keep digging in other foreign countries that I speak English, but I don't speak Chinese or, you know, all the other languages in the country, so there's many more, and they all need to be advanced. So I think we could be continuing to talk about pulling out physical evidence. That's really my focus, is I want a hatch cover. I want something clearly extraterrestrial that will take on a strong scientific evidence and catch a news cycle in a very positive and credible way. Something that could be on CNN for 3 or 4 days or catch a significant buzz. And that's my goal, really.
And if there have been that many crashes and retrievals, isn't the implication that maybe all of the stories from Andrew Kistner and from Len Stringfield, that we had a standing order in the American military from the 40s to the mid-1950s to shoot down disc craft, And as Lynn Stringfield said, we lost so many pilots trying to carry that out. We finally rescinded it.
Absolutely. Ryan, good luck with this conference. Well put on and very necessary. I'll be back with Linda Moulton Howe as we chat with John Alexander. He's an expert in the development of non-lethal weaponry. That's next on Coast to Coast AM.